It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In 2008, a longtime informant with the Philadelphia Police Department Narcotics Squad walked into the offices of the Philadelphia Daily News. He spoke with our guests, reporters Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker. The result was a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative series uncovering corruption in the city's police department. It led to a full-scale FBI probe. The events are chronicled in the book Busted, A Tale of Corruption and Betrayal in the City of Brotherly Love. They are speaking tonight at Point Park University's JVH Auditorium. Right now, Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker join us in our studios here at Essential Pittsburgh. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So let me start with you, Wendy. When Benny Martinez, the perpetual con man, walked into your office, what made you think that the story he told was true?
You know, that's a really good question. First of all, he came to me by way of a source. But one of the things that he had was paperwork. He believed that he was, first of all, when he walked in, he was in fear. He said he was in fear for his life, that he was going to be killed. He believed either the police officer that he had been working with for about 7 years as an informant, a drug informant, either wanted him dead or the drug dealers wanted him dead. And the reason was because a big-time drug dealer that they had set up together had figured out that Benny, the informant, was actually living in a house that the police officer, Jeff, was renting to him. So they had a built-in financial incentive to make drug busts, because every time Benny made a drug buy or they found guns in the house, he was paid by the police department. So there was this money flowing back in the way of rent. And one thing that the cop did, which was just so brazen to us, was that he needed Benny to get out of the apartment because he was afraid internal affairs was going to find out about it. So he took him to landlord-tenant court. So one thing we knew for sure was that, A, Benny was an informant because we verified it with the police department, and two, that Jeff Chudik was a police officer who owned the house where Benny was living.
So how did you two decide how you were going to work together on the Tainted Justice series? And Barbara Laker, let's bring you into the conversation. And, you know, here you are with what looks like, you know, it's almost like a Woodward and Bernstein scenario, and Watergate has fallen into your lap.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why it took two reporters is it was a very complicated story. It had numerous layers, and it took digging through search warrants and pulling search warrants and going through hundreds of homes across the city. And you can't really do that by yourself and figure out who's telling you the truth and who isn't and get to all these people in a, you know, reasonable amount of time.
You had to team up. And so in what ways did the decision to really go after this story, with all of the work involved in, as you said, Barbara, chasing down witnesses, coaxing reluctant victims to come forward, how did that test your determination to – because you had lives outside of your work. How did that test your will to balance motherhood with your career?
Well, it was really, really difficult. And in the book, Barbara and I are like characters in the book, you know, our crazy personalities come out. And at the time, I was hardly ever home because I was on the streets of Philadelphia at all hours, and I had two little kids. And I'll never forget, like, I think my son said to me one time when I was leaving for work, he said, "It was so nice to have you visit." And he was about five.
Wow.
And he was really twisting the knife. You know, he was really twisting the knife at that point. But it was very hard to balance work, especially because the story was just all consuming.
Did that give you pause, though, when he said that? I mean, did you at some point decide maybe this isn't worth it? There had to have been something that might have caused you to say that.
You know, I think that reporters – a lot of reporters who love the job and are bitten by the bug, it's both a blessing and a curse. So at the time, it didn't really occur to me that, you know, I was being missed at home. I think I learned that over time, way after the series was over. But when you're in the middle of it, when you're in the middle of chasing a story that you realize is a big story, it's sometimes hard to see something other than that. I think a lot of reporters are OCD, you know?
That's one way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Well, you both ended up coming under heat. The investigation is underway. You're deep into your work. And you end up getting in trouble when the first piece was published. And as a result, a drug kingpin was released from prison. Did either of you feel guilty about the role that your work played? played in this? You're both nodding. Barbara, go ahead.
Yes, we both felt very guilty. I mean, Pooh Bear, the person who was facing charges, he was going to face life in prison. It was a three times you're out kind of deal. He was a big time drug dealer.
A bad person.
Yeah, and he lived across the street from an elementary school. And I have older children, but Wendy had younger children at the time. And this Pooh Bear got out of prison. They had to release him because the search warrant that they used to get into his home was based on lies. And so people would accuse us of ruining the neighborhoods and letting out big-time drug dealers in the city. And what we did is we couldn't have done this series without some really good police officers, both in narcotics and all through the police department. And we called them and asked them what they thought of this. And they said, look, you guys didn't do this. You didn't let out Pooh Bear. You have to, in America, do search warrants the right way. You have to do police work the right way. Or otherwise, if you cut corners and lie, people do get off. That's the way it works in a democracy.
At what point did you realize that you had uncovered something that was much larger than one narcotics officer's falsified search warrants?
That came when we got a phone call from an attorney who said he represented a Jordanian smoke shop owner who said, you know that cop that you've been writing about in this squad? I have a client who says that these officers, this same squad, came into his smoke shop, destroyed all of the video surveillance cameras, and when the cameras went dark, they stole thousands of dollars in cash from him and then literally looted the store of all of the merchandise, all the loose tobacco, all the cartons of cigarettes. And he said, do you want to talk to my client? And I said, absolutely, I'll be right over. But when I got there, his client decided that he didn't want to talk to me. He was too afraid. He didn't show up to the interview. And then Barbara and I began to remember that in going through search warrants, it seemed to us that this squad had done a lot of these kind of raids on these mom and pop stores. We call them bodegas in Philadelphia. They're on every corner and they sell sodas and such. And so what we did was we just went to every single store owner that this squad had raided over a 2-year period, I believe. And all different, in all four corners of the city, all different nationalities, all different languages, people who didn't know one another. I mean, we're talking Vietnamese, Korean, Dominicans. They all told us the exact same story, that this squad came in, smashed the video surveillance cameras, and then robbed the store.
Were you surprised that all these people, these mom-and-pop shop owners came forward to tell you, to tell about the looting done by the narcotics squad?
Well, the thing that shocked us the most, I think, is that this had been going on for so long and no one knew about it. And these merchants hadn't told anyone about it until Wendy and I went to ask them. And it's because they come from countries where police officers do things that are terribly wrong in their homeland. And they are scared of police officers in this country. And they thought, well, what if we do legitimately get robbed and we call the police? Would they come if we file this complaint? So I think that was the initial shock. And the other shock that we had was in the end, we found 22 merchants across the city who told us the exact same story. And at first, when we were first talking to them, the first few didn't want to go on the record, didn't want their names used. They were very, very scared. And after we had talked to more and more people, we went back to the initial merchants we talked to and said, look, you're not alone. We found all these other people who say the same thing. And every single merchant not only went on the record with us and let us use their names, but some let us use their photos. And I think in a way it was their way of getting their power back, feeling empowered that they could stand up and say and unite and say this is wrong.
At one point, you had nearly all of the police officers involved in this story off the street, but the one who allegedly had sexually assaulted several women during the raids. Explain why it was so important for you to tell that story.
Well, a lot of the women we met who this had happened to were just these very demure women. They were minorities, either African-American or Latina, and we just felt like they were so victimized. They were poor in general, very much off the grid, the kind of people that even if they did speak up may not be taken seriously or listened to. And, you know, we just thought to ourselves, how can a police officer touch a woman like that and actually be have a nickname in the police department. His nickname was the Boob Man. I mean, his fetish was so widely known that it was like an open secret within the police department. And he had an internal affairs file that certainly indicated this type of behavior before. So we were just kind of stunned by that this was happening and no one was doing anything about it. Not even the officers he worked with wanted to turn him into internal affairs.
And I think it made us angry that if these were women who were white, suburban, wealthy women, they would have been listened to, they would have been interviewed. And the person who they said did this to them would have been questioned and charged and gone before a court or a judge to decide whether he's guilty or innocent. And that didn't happen in this case. And these women all complained. Two of the three complained the very night of the assault. And the third woman, they actually did a rape kit on her that very night because she thought she'd been damaged by what he'd done to her. And the police internal affairs unit actually took this police officer off the street that night. Even though she didn't know his name, they knew his name because they knew his reputation. And everyone in the squad knew that this was the cop who did that. And to us, that's just plain wrong.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guests are reporters Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker. They are co-authors of a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative series uncovering corruption in the city of Philadelphia's police department. The events are chronicled in the book Busted, A Tale of Corruption and Betrayal in the City of Brotherly Love. So the big question today, years later, is what happened to these officers?
Well, that's the outrageous part. There are all five of them. One retired, but the other four remain on desk duty, and this is almost 5 years later. They are collecting their salaries through the police department, which is taxpayers' dollars, and working towards their pension. And they are still, even though they're not on the street, they are still police officers. And in the meantime, the women are still waiting for justice or to even be listened to. None of them have been questioned by a grand jury or even interviewed. And one of the merchants who we talked to, who actually had a backup video, so he gave it to us, that shows the officers actually cutting the wires and fixated on these video surveillance cameras. He lost his store and then had to lose his house. He had to sell his house and move to a smaller house. And he cuts meat in a Costco. So the victims have suffered, but the people who have been accused of this wrongdoing remain police officers.
From your reporting, Wendy, what kind of proof or evidence would the FBI have?
Yeah, I think, you know, the FBI, as far as we know, their investigation is still open status. We haven't heard that they've closed it. I do believe that the FBI's investigation has stagnated and for reasons that we're not privy to, because, you know, the FBI is very secretive. I mean,
right, that was going to be my next question, is why has this investigation stalled, and are the feds taking these allegations seriously?
You know, you got to wonder. I mean, I try to go through my head. Why isn't 22 bodega owners all saying the same thing? Why isn't that enough? Like, okay, I understand some of them didn't keep great financial bookkeeping, you know, because a lot of these immigrants kept cash and on hand, or, you know, under their mattresses. They didn't trust banks. So is it that, or is it that the officers aren't rolling on one another? Like, they're all saying, I didn't take anything. And so they're all standing together. Like, what would they need to bring it before a grand jury? Because as far as we know, the bodega owners haven't gone before a grand jury. I know when we initially broke the story, the FBI did go and interview the shop owners. But after that, it's been kind of quiet.
So what exactly would you say has happened as a direct result of your hard work and your expose?
Well, the FBI does still have a task force, and it is still open. So if they thought there was nothing to this, they would have cleared the officers and told the police commissioner that there's nothing there. But as far as seeing a lot of result other than that, we really haven't seen it. I mean, the police commissioner in Philadelphia did go around to a lot of the merchants and merchants groups and talk to them and let them know that he wanted to hear from them and he wanted to fix the wrong. But as far as any I mean, there's obviously been no charges or nobody's lost their job over this.
And even now there's another set of narcotics officers under investigation for stealing money from drug dealers. And this is just a completely different set that the FBI is looking at in Philadelphia. After our stories ran, the police commissioner did put in new regulations, more oversight of how police officers work with their informants. But I don't think that that goes far enough to stop and root out theft and that kind of thing.
And what has happened to the alleged victims, and how are they handling the fact that nothing has been done?
Well, they're outraged. They remain outraged. And some of them it's changed their view of police officers. So, for example, when the women are out and they see a police car even like three blocks away, they start to shake. They are terrified. I don't think if they've lost their trust in police officers. And they feel like they haven't been heard except through what the reporting that Wendy and I did. They feel like authorities, people who could actually do something, have not really heard them. And so I think, and for the bodega owners, I think they came to this country believing that America could give them a better life. They'd find a peace here. And they've lost their faith in the American dream. And I think they've felt like they've lost their dignity.
We've seen newspapers going out of business or cutting back on staff. The Daily News was nearly bankrupt when you started this series. What does your investigation and the work that you did, the accomplishment here, say about the relevance of daily newspapers?
I think newspapers – I mean, this whole story began with a tip that came to me through a source, because I had been writing a series of stories about police brutality. So essentially I was on a beat covering something, and in doing so I formed relationships with people who passed this tip on to me. And I really think that on the ground beat reporting is always the best way to get a really good investigative piece that the public should know about. And so I think that if reporters – on the ground reporters go away and we have more like fly helicopter type journalism, it just won't be as close. It won't be as close to the community.
Barbara, same question with regard to newspapers. And as Wendy said, you know, you're working a beat. You know, this goes back decades, and centuries, in fact, where newspapers have come out on a daily basis. They've been the thing that people have relied on in today's digital society. Their worth, or at least the relevance in the minds of some people, has been marginalized. So what does this say about the relevance of daily newspapers?
Well, I think daily newspapers are so very relevant and crucial to a democracy. It's the reporters who do investigative journalism can find wrongdoing, put it out there, and sometimes effect change. And if you have fewer and fewer reporters, some reporters may just sit at their desk and not get out into the community. And when you don't get out into the community and talk to people who are living real lives, you don't hear what's going on out there. And then they lose their trust and they feel like they can't talk to you and they feel disconnected. So I think it's essential at the Daily News that we're lucky in that the editor gives a couple reporters, two, three, four reporters, freedom to do investigative work, while other reporters have to do like two, three, four daily stories a day. But I think it's come down to you have to pick and choose the stories you go after. But we can never, ever let go of investigative reporting in this country, because then everyone will get away with everything.
Barbara, what do you hope readers will take away from Busted?
Well, that's a good question. I hope that they enjoy the ride. A lot of people who've read this book say it reads like a novel, but it's all true. They say that they can't put it down once they pick it up. I think that the book tells a lot about Philadelphia. It talks about the drug war. It talks about the newspaper industry and colorful characters that they may never meet in real life, like seasoned drug dealers and criminal attorneys or defense attorneys. And I think it's kind of like The Wire. in a way, people have told us. So I just hope they enjoy the ride. It's supposed to, I mean, people say it's an enjoyable ride to read.
And Wendy, what do you hope people take away from the book?
You know, I have to say honestly that I hope that the book, maybe that someone in the FBI reads the book and they see it all together as a picture. You know, like they can step back and take a look at everything that we had and everything that we laid out and come at the investigation again and see a fresh angle, perhaps.
Reporters Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker, they're co-authors of a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative series uncovering corruption in the city of Philadelphia's police department. The events are chronicled in the book Busted, A Tale of Corruption and Betrayal in the City of Brotherly Love. They're speaking tonight at Point Park University's JVH Auditorium. Thanks to both of you for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Coming up, Elaine LaBaume's suggestions on spring festivals for you to visit. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.